Hello again, and welcome to Victory Labs, part of the Throwback Thursday celebrations for the 50th anniversary of Riverside International Speedway. I'm Dylan Langell. Thank you for pressing play at riversidespeedway.ca or clicking download on iTunes. And thank you if this is your very first time listening to Victory Labs. We're now in episode number 4, and in my opinion, this made winter fly right by. Last episode, number 3, I got to chat with Maritime racing legend Frank Frazier about his career at Riverside. You can check that out in the archives if you haven't had a chance yet. We have something new for you today. We go into the stands and talk to you, the fans of Riverside International Speedway. Ernie Lively will share some of his memories at the track, but first, I am joined by a maritime racing legend. He was one of the original drivers in 1969 at Riverside, and he won many races in his yellow number 66. Bobby Allen joins me on episode number 4 of Victory Labs. He is a member of the Maritime Motorsports Hall of Fame, and he is one of the original drivers at Riverside International Speedway. Very famous for driving his yellow number 66. Bobby Allen joins me on the 4th episode of Victory Labs. How you doing, Bob?
Great, Dylan, and yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, it's been a little rough here in the Maritimes. It's spring, but it's still snowing. Are you in Florida, I understand?
Well, I tell you, it's kind of rather nice down here. I just came in out of the sun.
Oh, really? I think we're all a little jealous of that. So what we're doing with Victory Labs is celebrating the 50th anniversary of Riverside International Speedway. And to quote Frank Frazier, he said, "You are the best driver to ever race at Riverside." What do you think when you hear something like that?
Tell Frank I owe him one.
Well, Bob, let's start from the beginning. Where did you get your start in racing? And was it a family thing, or did you just kind of start on your own back
in
the
day? No, I'll tell you how it happened. But I was working in my little shop one day. My buddy came along to me, and he said they had just opened a racetrack, Fraser's Mountain in New Glasgow. It was summer or the spring of 1966, a dirt track. So he said, "You're going to build a race car. I want to know if I'd drive it." Well, sure. So there we went. And I was just, the thing that I really recall, it was hot, dusty, and very dangerous back in those days on a dirt track, because the rules were, if any, were very relaxed. I mean, if you had a helmet and a roll cage, you were all set to go. So needless to say, it was some banging and crashing. That was the first year. Then the next year, they paved it, which, and they came in and brought in a few rules, and which made it pretty good, actually. That was 67 and 8, and then 69, of course, Riverside opened.
So when did you hear about Riverside opening back in 1969? And just to go back, how big was Fraser Mountain Raceway?
Fraser Mountain was a quarter-mile track.
Okay, so compared to Fraser Mountain, you're hearing about a third of a mile track with high banking. What did you think as a driver hearing about that?
Oh, no comparison.
No comparison.
No comparison at all. And by that time, the level of the vehicles were getting up there, and you brought in a lot of people from, like, the local racing in on the dirt track was mainly locals, you know, within 60 miles or 50 miles.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, when Riverside opened, the guys were coming from everywhere. Well, 69, yeah, they had the first International 100. And, of course, that brought the guys from Ontario to Quebec, Jean-Paul Cavanna from Quebec, and a lot of guys up from Maine. And we just happened to win that one.
Yeah, so what are your memories of that very first race, your first time racing at Riverside International Speedway?
That's a long time ago.
So what about any memories of your first win there? You were saying back in 69, the International 100.
That was the first big win we had. We had lots of wins at Riverside.
Was that your first win at Riverside or the first big win?
First big win, yeah.
So did you have a couple of little wins before that? How many races were in the first year, roughly?
Well, they ran every weekend, yeah. And in the first years, we were quite consistent, you know. And then they were only 25 or 30 laps. That was a feature race. They had a 10, a 15, and a probably a 25.
So what was it like racing a 100-lap race compared to those small little heats and then maybe a 30-lap race?
Oh, it was once you got going, it was... I'll tell you, the thing with the longer races for us, like we used to go down to Maine and raced all the little tracks, and we raced Oxford. But we were... I mean, I had a small family back in those days, and a young family, and my buddy, He was in the same boat, and we didn't have a whole lot of money to spend. So everything we had was either somebody loaned it to us or we made it.
Mm-hmm.
So in the long race, it started to show up. You know, our homemade stuff wasn't working. But I was very fortunate to have a guy with me by the name of Don Robertson that became a renowned engine builder, and he could make horsepower with very little money. And he worked for me in probably after 69.
Mm-hmm.
And he went on after I finished, he went on to work with Rolly McDonald and actually helped a lot of guys.
So moving a little bit to 1970, I want to ask about this because I've actually looked through some old articles and through some of the old pictures of Riverside. Back in 1970, you suffered a pretty serious back injury. Was that a big wreck that happened maybe in a corner or on the front stretch?
Yeah, tell us about that. Number one turn, and it was, things were getting pretty heated up, and I remember Rolly McDonald was one of the guys that was involved. I think there was three of us in it, but I went up over the top of one of them and landed head first right into the bottom of the guardrail, which was concrete, and I did have a fractured vertebrae in my back.
So how long were you on the sidelines for?
The rest of that summer. That was probably in the middle of the summer, and I didn't race until the next year again.
So did you kind of slowly get back into it, or did you just take
No, just jump back in it.
Just jump right back in?
Yeah, actually, I might have... No, I don't think I did the rest of the year, but the next spring I hopped right in it again. Yeah.
You know, going from a pretty big wreck like that, were you a little nervous, perhaps? I know some people in different sports, if they get hurt once...
I thought about it for the first half a lap.
And then you got going.
And you got going, yeah.
Are there any memories of any other wins you had? Your numerous wins through 1974 and 77. Any races stick out in your mind?
I can tell you a big disappointment.
Go ahead.
It would have been probably 1976 or 7. Don Biederman from Ontario was the man when he came down, of course, Junior Annaly.
Mm-hmm.
And Junior didn't come this year, but Biederman did, and... Right from the first lap until the last lap, it was just nick and tuck, you know. He would grab the lead a little bit, but towards the end, I was getting the best of him. And the last quarter of a lap coming out the home stretch, the upper side was blocked with cars. I mean, there was two or three cars abreast, of which they weren't supposed to be out there because they were already lapped. I saw noticed one car that I knew, and I thought, well, he's going to go. And he was down on the bottom on the inside, so I went behind him, and Biederman went up on the top, and he beat me by about half a car length.
Ah, so close. And how was it driving against Don Biederman? Just to kind of skip ahead a bit, but Don had a couple of 250 wins under his belt. He's regarded as the greatest Canadian driver in history. What was it like competing with him on the high banks of Riverside?
Well, like I say, I mean, it was rather exciting, but all this stuff, doesn't matter who, once you get going, you know, now it's just, you do what you do best.
It doesn't matter really who's around you, you're focused on number one.
Or where it is.
Right.
Yeah.
So in 1977, the 250 is introduced, so now we double up and add 50 laps on top of that. Through a driver's perspective, now you're driving quite a bit. Well, you know, there's the Oxford 250, but now up in the Maritimes, there's a 250.
250s? Well, back then compared to today, I mean, back then the cars weren't, today they have power steering on them and cooling system can get air into them. And I'm sure it's much easier than it was back then because... you know, to drive that far, it took a lot of effort.
What kind of a car were you driving, say, around 77?
77? I think a car that John Chisholm gave me, a Chevelle, a Bobby Allison Chevelle that he had brought up back in the early 70s. I think it would have been like a 74 or 75. In 1975, they brought Benny Parson up, who had just won the Daytona 500.
Right.
To run, and he drove John's car, and he raced it in Antigonish. And he didn't do that well with it, but then they went over to Shubenacadie to run the road course, and he smashed it, put it backwards into, I think, the only tree out there.
Ah.
But anyway, John just stripped it, and he gave it to me, so we took it home and rebuilt it, and that was the car I ran.
A couple weeks ago, for part of our Throwback Thursday celebrations for Riverside, we uploaded video footage of that 1977 250 of you going door-handle to door-handle with Earl Ross. Did Earl race a lot at Riverside? I know he raced...
I think that was the only time That's the only time that I'm aware of that he did race there.
At the 250 or any time at all.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of the 250s you ran about compared to some of the 100s or maybe some of the smaller races? I mean, you just mentioned about how it takes a toll on the cars and no power steering. Was probably quite different, right?
Oh, big difference. Big difference. I mean, I never drove one with power steering on it, but and the proper setup, which makes them handle and makes them drive easier. You know, we were back then, we were just guessing.
What was it, a big family and team affair? Did you have a big group of guys that would help you kind of set up the car for high banks?
Oh yeah, we always had probably a couple too many.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanting to help, and you know, in 73 or 4, things were, you know, like we were really progressing, because if you were out front quite a bit, it was literally maybe a little easier to get a sponsor. And we were very lucky to get 3 or 4 good sponsors, which, you know, really helped.
Mm-hmm. And one of your most famous, a lot of people would remember, would be Alex McDonald Motors, just outside of Riverside and Marshy Hope. How did you team up with that, and why a bright yellow car with number 66?
Well, Alec was an American Motor dealer back in those days, and a lot of people found it hard to believe that he would cough up the amount of money that he did, but he loved racing,
mm-hmm.
and he was an American Motors dealer, so I told him, look, here, sponsor us, and I put a Javelin body on it. That year, we had 4 big sponsors, which really gave us a boost.
Do you remember what they were?
Yeah, they were Clark Tire, which is a tire company in town. Now, when I say, I guess it doesn't matter. I got $1,000 a piece. So back in 1972, that would be like...
That's a lot of money.
That'd be like $5,000
right.
each, which is still not, in today's standards, is still not a lot, but... But we had 4 of them, Nitro Fuels, McLeod, and Jack Clark, ran a Clark Tire. I know we had 4 of them anyway.
but they all helped out, right?
Oh, yeah.
When did you wind down your racing career? Did you race it a little bit in the 80s?
No, I raced in 1970, the end of the year in 77. I took a mild heart attack.
Oh, really?
I was 38 years old.
And that's when you called it quits there?
That ended it, yeah. But in 1980, they were running a 250, and Jim Hallahan, of course, was, it would have been 1980. Jim Hallahan had probably a car similar to what I had, you know, which was hard to drive. I mean, they were hard to drive. And I think it was after the first 100 lap, he jumped out of it and said, here, take that, will you? He was getting a little draggy.
Yeah.
So I remember about 5 laps, and I went head first into the wall.
Oh. And when
that was the last time I raced.
That was
almost
the last time.
I almost got into it again now after, late 15 years ago. Came close, but after I went home and thought about it.
No dice.
The thought passed pretty quickly.
Did you hang around the track a lot after you were done racing?
Not really. You know, the reason why I didn't is because I figured if I did, I would be back at it.
You'd get the bug again.
Yeah, no, I literally stayed away from it because of that. Then, of course, 20 years later, I go to the big ones.
You go to the 250 race check out other ones too?
Yeah.
So what did it mean to you to be inducted into the Maritime Motorsports Hall of Fame in 2011?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic, especially along with Junior and Earl Ross. You know, that was quite an evening.
And actually, what I want to do is do almost kind of a name game with some of the most famous drivers we had here at Riverside. And just give me a couple of thoughts, and right there, Earl Ross, some thoughts about racing against him.
Well, Earl Ross was a complete different category. I mean, he raced for a living. And he raced a car that was like, a Southern car. Top of the line, the best you could get, like similar to what everybody is, or I shouldn't say everybody, but most of them today are driving. For example, like Rolly McDonald and all those guys that are John Fleming, and I mean, they're driving cars today that are, I think, that's as good as it gets.
How about Junior Hanley?
Junior Hanley? That's another story. Junior was just meant to be a racer. I'll never forget, I met Junior, and we talked about it at the induction that night. It was probably 19. Riverside opened in 69. I think Drag City opened around the same time in Halifax. And we went down that night. This would have been like 1970. We won. And these two guys come down out of the stand afterwards. I find out afterwards it's Junior Henley, who I never heard tell of, and Clyde Hemion. And they said they wanted to buy my car. Well, yeah, okay, everything's for sale. So I sold them the car. And I told you before about the engine builder that I had, and I think that was the thing they were impressed with, the power that it had. But anyway, I sold them the car, and at the induction, when I'm talking to Junior, and I said, what did you ever do with it? He said, I took it home and junked it, and I used the engine.
He just wanted the heart of it.
Yeah.
That's all he wanted. What about Frank Fraser, who said you were the best driver
that,
there?
That's another guy that was born to race. Now, Frank was used to, probably grew up on a short track, which Riverglade, and he was very, very competitive there. But on the longer tracks, I remember back in those days, he maybe lacked a little bit, but he caught on, got up to it, got up to speed. We made a few trips to Riverglade, and that's a different story. Yeah, it was bump and grind.
And finally, memories of John Chisholm.
Oh, John, yeah. That was, I'll tell you, my best memory of John Chisholm was in 1969. I had won the first 100, and the radio announcer, we were going down to Sydney to do a little spiel on promote racing, and John had just gotten a brand new 69 Shelby Mustang with a real slope back on it, you know. So those two were in the front and I'm in the back. Well, I was scared on TV, but not near as scared as I was in that car going down there with him. But no, John was right into racing. I mean, that was his thing, and he done a lot. Actually, done a lot for us, helped us a bit.
In what way?
Well, like he gave me a car one time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, if we needed something, you know, we could probably go to John.
And he'd give you the hookup.
Yeah.
So over the years, you raced at Riverside from 69 to 77 and a little bit here and there. What's your favorite memory? Number one.
Probably winning the first 100.
And was that your biggest win at your point in your career?
Yeah. We won the points championship one year in there, and we won the points championship in Halifax.
Yeah, in 1972, you won the points championship.
Yeah.
And that was a weekly racing series still then?
Yeah.
And every weekend?
Every weekend, yeah.
Do you recall how many races you won around 1972?
Oh, gosh, I have no idea.
Ballpark, roughly.
Well, we won a lot of them.
Right, to win the championship.
We won a lot of them in that year.
And that was your comeback.
Yeah, 72, 3, 4, 5, lots of wins.
To all the fans listening to this, do you want to say anything to the fans that remember the yellow 66 that raced in the high banks of Riverside and all across the Maritimes?
Well, it was certainly a thrill to see, like in Andy Ganish back then, like 5,500 people in the stands. That's probably only about half of what they have today, but back then it was. I remember different times, like the guardrail, the fence in front of the stands. There'd be so many people standing there and be pushing on it. I remember one time it almost pushed it out onto the racetrack.
They were loving it.
They were loving it, yeah.
And I appreciate you taking the time to join us on Victory Laps because we're celebrating 50 years of racing at Riverside International Speedway.
Well, thank you for having me.
And thank you, Bobby. Are we going to see you at the track this summer in 2019?
Oh, you probably will.
All right.
Okay, buddy.
Looking forward to it. Thank you again, Bob.
All right. Bye-bye.
We have a new segment on Victory Laps where we talk to the fans in the stands over the many years, 50 years at Riverside International Speedway, and kicking things off, a really big fan of racing all around, Ernie Lively joining me for the fourth episode of Victory Laps. How you doing, Ernie?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Well, it's
glad to talk to you.
Yeah, glad to talk to you, too. It's great to have you on here. So we've had Jer Bear, Jerry Lawrence. We've had Kenny Wallace, who won the IWK 250 last year. And last episode, we had Frank Fraser really reminiscing about the memories from the beginning to about 2018 for Riverside. And you've been there for pretty much every year, right?
Yes, I have. I was at the very first race that was ever held there, and I remember that. I don't remember so much about the race. I remember more about going there.
So how long have you been a racing fan? Has that been your entire life?
My entire life. My grandfather used to take me to races in Nine Mile River when I was 4 years old.
So, and then in 1969, that's when John Chisholm opens up Riverside International Speedway in James River. Did you hear about a big track being opened up there, or was it, word around town?
Oh, I was well aware of what was going on. Like, I've been a car nut all my life and a stock car fan all my life, and, you know, would always wait for the races to come on, ABC Wide World of Sports, and I was well aware a track was being built down there.
So what do you remember about that first race back in 1969?
Well, my fondest memory, like I said, was really not about the actual competition of the race, but just going there. There were racers from this area, like Bedford, Sackville, you know, Nine Mile River, all that way. And my cousin, who lives in Bedford, had a friend on the Beaver Bank Road with a race car, a 57 Chev. And Andy Ganish from here back in 69 was a long haul. So they wound up putting the race car in the back of my cousin's dump truck. And they took it to Andy Ganish in the back of the dump truck. And I followed them down. And John was smart enough. He knew that this would happen more than once, and they had a dirt ramp built there where a dump truck or a straight truck or anything could back up to it, and they would back the cars off and put them back on that way. What I remember most about it, and that was before the exit was there, so you had to go through James River and across to get to it. It's not like the exit that's there now.
Right, and was there any other races, before 1977, was there any other notorious races that happened at Riverside that you can recollect?
I really remember one really well. I'm trying to remember the year of it, and again, my memory fails me on that, but it's the one where everybody remembers that ever went there, was when Junior Hanley and John Chisholm and Don Biederman got into the wreck on the backstretch. And for some reason, I was on the infield that day. I believe maybe I might have been driving the pace car then, because I did some of that, but I can't swear to it. But for some reason, I was on the infield. So once that wreck happened, I was right there on the scene, but stayed out of the way of the cleanup crew. And I remember standing by Don Biederman, and he was beside himself. Never really said too much, but him and Junior Hanley had the big feud going on those years, and Don said was, look at the hero now, and I can see him to this day leaning against the wall there then, and he was pretty disgusted, and it was quite a mess, and I know that anybody that ever went there would remember that wreck. It was, there's pictures of it around still, so that's one of my bigger memories of there, and I also remember the Actor going there, or the Bush North, or whatever was going on then. I remember the American cars coming up very well. Dave Dion and all the guys from down there. That was quite a show then, which our guys really didn't compete in that. But very fond memories of races there.
What are your memories of the first 250 race they had back in 1977?
The place was packed, and I know I was there. There's something I wouldn't let myself miss, but I'm almost embarrassed to say I can't exactly remember it. I'd love to have the program.
Well, because there's so many good memories of Riverside, right? There's just been so many fun races and competitive races. But let's talk about the drivers quickly. Are there any drivers that really stuck out in your mind or maybe that were some of your favorites?
Greg Sword is a friend of mine and always was one of my favorites. Terry Clattenburg, I used to work for. He was always one of my favorites. Bobby Allen, for sure. I always liked him. It goes on and on. I have, you know, memories of Stephen Henderson being there. Like, I know them all. Junior Kelly, I knew very well. Scott Kelly, I knew very well. Of course, Scott Fraser, Frank Fraser. Like, you know, I knew all those guys because I was very, you know, involved in around the race tracks at that time.
And that must have been pretty cool working at Riverside. And I've been in the infield. I remember the first time seeing the high banks, and it was almost like this giant coliseum. But even in the early 70s and the 80s and whatnot, what did that mean to you as a fan, working at a behemoth of a track?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, standing down there and looking up and seeing the banking there. Of course, we had nothing like it around here. And I remember driving the pace car around there, and that was the most fun I ever had on four wheels, was driving around there in the pace car, right? It was pretty cool. If, you know, these fans watch, you know, a NASCAR race, and they've often talked about, you know, the banking at Daytona, and they show how a Volkswagen would roll over, you know, if it was left by itself, they were stopped. And that place has that same kind of feeling. There's a dip, you know, in the backstretch, and it's really something to drive around. I mean, I can only imagine what it'd be like in a race car.
In 2005, John Chisholm gets the track back, and he completely renovates it, pretty much just except for digging up the actual track. What did you think about going back to Riverside after it was all spruced up?
I was so anxious to see that. Like, I had been to Bristol, and I've been to many short tracks down through the U.S. I follow it a lot, and that place there, honestly, I don't know of anyone that's any nicer. They're really not. There's a lot of aged tracks around. There's very few new ones, and there's none better than that. There really is not. And John did such a job on that, and I know it was a passion of his, and I guess maybe it was easier for him to do, you know, being a racer and capable of doing it. And, you know, all of us fans and all of the racers really owe that family a lot. It's just a place that a real race fan, a true race fan around here, they won't miss it. Any race fan from around here, I know, is going to be there.
It's going to be a big time, the biggest race in the Maritimes coming up in July. And I thank you, Ernie, for hopping on Victory Laps to share some of your memories over the years, and we're looking forward to see you at Riverside once again this year.
Oh, I'll never miss. As long as I can get around, I'll never miss it.
A big thanks to Ernie Lively for sharing his experiences at Riverside, and a big thanks to Bobby Allen for taking the time to talk about his racing career at Riverside. The countdown is on for opening day at the track. Saturday, June 8th, is when the Parts for Trucks Pro Stock Tour comes to Riverside for the Triple 50s presented by Kaylee Honda. What's old is new again, with three 50-lap segments with the possibility of reversing the field after 50 laps and then again after 100. Tickets for the event will be available online starting in early May, and they'll also be joined with the Napa Sportsman Series for the Henry's Auto Pro 75. After that, we shift our focus to the IWK 250 Super Race Weekend. Kicking things off on Thursday, June 18th, it's the Test Fest followed by the Tailgate Party, where the godfather of East Coast Blues will play, Matt Minglewood, at the Tailgate Party for the IWK 250. Tickets for the Tailgate Party are $20, or they're included with the IWK 250 Weekend Pass. On Friday, July 19th, the Napa Sportsman Series in the Maritime League of Legends race at Riverside with the Maritime Legends Challenge and the Henry's Auto Pro 100. And on Saturday, July 20th, is the event we've all been waiting for, the IWK 250 presented by Steve Lewis. The value-packed weekend pass starts at just $60. And you can get yours online at riversidespeedway.ca, and that's where you can also book your campsite. Speaking of the IWK 250, if you would like to sponsor a lap during the race, packages are now available, and there are five different packages starting at just $100, which includes a one-lap sponsorship, IWK 250 weekend pass, and your choice of a Riverside International Speedway 50 hat or t-shirt, and there is a limited number of laps available, so don't wait if you want to do this. When they're gone, they are all gone. After the IWK 250, the other events on the 2019 calendar are the NASCAR Pinty Series race weekend on August 16th and 17th. On the 16th, it's the Henry's Auto Pro 100, the Napa Sportsman Series, and the Passion Flooring East Coast Mini Stock Tour comes to Riverside for the first time in 2019. Then on August 17th, the NASCAR Pinty Series and the Maritime League of Legends will race. And finally, it's the season finale on September 7th with the Parts for Trucks Pro Stock Tour, the Napa Sportsman Series, and the Passion Flooring East Coast Mini Stock Tour. This is all part of the Throwback Thursday celebrations for the 50th anniversary of Riverside International Speedway. We have been paying tribute to the drivers on track and those behind the scenes here at Riverside with old photos, trivia, and even some old video. Did you see the footage of the very first 250 race back in 1977? Very cool. And if you have any old photos or videos, we would love to see them, particularly if they're from the years 1969 to 1989. If you'd love to share them, please email info@riversidespeedway.ca. And if you would like to share some of your memories here on Victory Laps, we'd love to hear from you. Get in contact with us, info@riversidespeedway.ca. Well, the checkered flag is waving. I'm Dylan Lanchel, and thank you again for listening to Victory Laps, part of the Throwback Thursday celebrations for Riverside International Speedway.